Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Next is Victor Mitash. That one, Mr. Mitash, is Bill Reeves.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here and to express my testimony. I don't oppose the Susitna project as a whole, but I do object at this time for additional funding, especially from the permanent fund given, until such time as a lot of the questions have been answered, primarily. As a permanent fund dividend belongs to all the people of the state of Alaska, what effect does this funding have on people, say, in Kotzebue, Barrow, and all the other areas of Alaska? If it's trying to take projects away from them, I don't, I'm sure they would approve it. Will the cost of this energy be in line with the cost from other alternate sources, such as Chattanooga, Rapid Lake, coal-fired generating plants, and so forth? I think it's only fair that the people of Alaska know what this energy is going to cost them, not only in the near future, but in the long range. For example, the Connect Farm Crossing, which is long overdue and coming, should be studied more closely with the alternate power that such a structure can create or provide. There has been some studies made of that already, but been very little. Also, it does not have a tendency to suppress other revenue-producing projects, such as untapped gas and coal reserves, which we have a great abundance of. We have over 2.5 million tons of proven coal reserves, and it wouldn't take exception to some of the statements that have been made that coal is a dirty product, but there's been substantial improvements made in cleaning up coal here the last year, such as many others. In other words, coal could be scrubbed to 99% clean at this time, so environmentally it's an acceptable substitute. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Rick. The gentleman next is, just a second. Victor, there's a
with regard to your statement on the permanent fund and the effect on other areas of the state, that is certainly a valid consideration. If you look at other areas of the state now, they're covered by the Energy Assistance Program, by the Joint Fuel Program, by a number of other things that work for those areas that don't work for our area now. But it's certainly, particularly if you're talking about a permanent fund dividend versus an energy dividend, equity is a critical consideration. If equity can't be built in to that program, and I think there's an attempt to do that now, it's got to be refined, but equity is an absolutely critical consideration to any replacement for the permanent fund dividend. And I agree with your statement on that, but I think that's recognized as something we're very definitely looking at.
Well, would there be some benefit to the other people in Alaska in general?
Yes, that's it.
And usually these, the interest for the income revenues from the permanent fund dividend and using it for
the way it's written,
construction of the dam site, sir.
The way it's written, it can be applied by anything as small as a small village council, a group of people together in any area of the state have the same access as anyone else does. It's also got a differential for the cost of construction differences in various areas of the state. But again, I think that total package consideration has to look at the overall equity. If it doesn't meet the equity test, it shouldn't be done with that source of funds.
Will the people have an opportunity to vote on this?
No money comes out of the dividend fund unless it's approved by a vote of the service area.
Thank you very much, both of you. Next is William Reeves, and after that, Judy Smick is, Bill Reeves here. Let's see. Judy, would you please go ahead and add in with Jim Sykes? I appreciate the concise statements where we'll be moving, we're moving ahead as well. Welcome back, Judy.
Thank you. I was in my testimony up until last night going to address the bill specifically, but on my way home, I stopped at the Institute of Social and Economic Research and picked up one of their latest reports or reviews. It's called Sustainable Spending Levels from Alaskan State Revenues. Have any members of the committee seen this review? Reading it last night, I decided to concentrate on this for my testimony. Lee Wareham referred to the timid souls at ISER. I don't think they're timid at all. I think they do very good work. In this review, they talk about petroleum supply and then go from there and look at state revenues, recurring and non-recurring, and how they're affected by the state spending limit. And obviously, there are great implications in this for the Susitna project and vice versa. I'd like to just bring out a few points that I think are very important. In the petroleum supply, it is very clear to all of us that nearly all of Alaska's production and reserves come from the Prudhoe Bay field. In about 5 years, that oil production in Prudhoe Bay will begin to decline, and will decline dramatically. The crude oil inventory, including proved reserves and an estimate of recoverable undiscovered resources, show that about a half of the 1982 inventory will remain in 1997. Along the same lines, new field development takes 10 to 15 years. There's an important factor in oil field location. Most of the oil that is yet to be discovered is probably onshore underneath federal lands or offshore, like on the outer continental shelf. Now, on these federal lands, Alaskans receive some tax monies from production, property, profits, but they'll receive only a small share of the royalties. Outside the 3-mile limit, Alaska revenues will be almost nil because Alaska has no taxing authority and no royalties received outside the 3-mile limit. So the point there is our petroleum revenues obviously are in decline. Now, petroleum, the question of recurring and non-recurring revenues. Currently, if you use 1982 dollars, Prudhoe Bay is currently worth about $36 billion by ICER's estimates. And in fiscal year 1983, 86% of state revenues come directly from non-recurring petroleum activity. So what does that leave us with? It leaves us with 14% of the general fund coming from recurring revenues, which is what I think that we should be basing our economic future on. That 14%, 7% is from reserves not directly related to petroleum. And 7% is from investment earnings, such as the permanent fund. The state spending limit, as you know much better than I probably, will not be a constraint on state spending after 1988, because if you look at the revenue curve and spending limit, the revenue curve passes, or they cross in 1988 when the state revenues actually fall below the spending limit. And 1/3 of the current personal income for people in state can be traced to state government spending. And that comes partly from the figure 1 out of 6 jobs in the state are directly related to state operating appropriations, and then you have the spin-off effects that bring that percentage up to a fraction up to 1/3. So out of these, I would like to make a few general comments. One, Alaska petroleum revenues are going to peak in this decade. Subsequent decline is going to put us into a fiscal crisis. We've all talked about fiscal crisis. Here it is in black and white. Second point is recurring state revenues are only a very small percent of these total revenues. And in 1988, the state revenues are going to fall below the state spending limit. Now, funding for hydro projects is one of the fairly new components of the state operating budget that has grown a lot in the past several years. The others are loan programs and municipal grants and the like. So CIVNA and the state's energy future has to be carefully analyzed in light of this revenue picture. And I guess that's the main message that I want to bring to you today. How do we, as Alaskan citizens, concerned about our energy future, and our future quality of living, how are we going to prioritize these state expenditures in the future? There was a comment earlier this morning also that CIVNA would provide zero consumption of non-renewable resources. Well, I'd like to propose that money derived from petroleum is a non-renewable resource, and that if CIVNA is built with the current financing schemes, that is a definite consumption of a non-renewable resource. I forgot to say at the beginning, I am a representative of the Northern Alaska Environmental Center, and that's who I speak for today. I remember this because I would expect a question from one of you anyway, well, why is the Northern Alaska Environmental Center not talking about the environmental impact? So I'd like to take just a brief time to explain that. And that is the environmental organizations are interested in this quality of life, a certain quality of life. They have concentrated in the past on particularly environmental issues. In the CIVNA project, obviously, there are environmental concerns. Those environmental concerns have not gone away, but we are still concerned about the environment. But we think that the quality of life in Alaska that is threatened by the state putting billions of dollars into this project, and billions of dollars that it looks like it doesn't have unless it starts dipping into other sources of revenue or maybe goes to the bond market and jeopardizes our bond rating. That quality of life in a fiscal crisis would be impossible. And this is why we at the Northern Alaska Environmental Center and many of the other environmental groups and public interest coalitions in the state are opposed to the CIVNA project in its current form and questioning the financing schemes. And thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Judy. I might explain that one reason that we have delved into the environmental issues is that that is really the province of the resources committee, and we're looking at the economic and the financial aspects. So,
yeah, I understand that, but there was a question earlier this morning.
I just want to make clear that we too care about the environment, even though that's not the life we're concerned today. Thank you very much for giving your testimony. Next, we have Jim Sykes, and after that, George Sklato.
Thank you very much, Senator Fisher and other senators in the committee. My name is Jim Sykes. I'm representing myself, and the reason I'm here today is what I've heard pretty much to the testimony since I arrived here. We've heard that Municipal Light and Power, Chugach Electric, and a representative from CIVNA Power Now said that they want a wise decision to be made, they want it to be rational, and they want it to be orderly. They also said that they don't know the final costs. I think we need to know, or at least have a much better idea than we currently do now, about those final costs. And we need to pull together the research that is already available to get it in one place so that the policymakers, so that the general public, can have a real idea about this issue. It seems to me, as I've been working on some radio interviews concerning energy and power development in Alaska, that there is a feeling among the general public that this is either good or bad. I disagree. I want to make it very clear I am not against hydropower. I support hydropower in general, and I support the way in which it's being done with our oil money. However, I think each individual project must stand on its own merits. And this CIVNA project has so many ramifications, and it is a complex project from the financing, from the standpoint of the environment, that the information we now have is not adequate to make a decision. Therefore, when I speak about Senate Bills 68, 69, and 71, I do oppose them at this time and think that they may be a good idea someday, but under the current conditions, they are totally inappropriate. As far as Senate Bill 69, I would like to mention specifically, in essence, you are being asked to approve the Acres feasibility study. Senators, quite simply, the study is so outdated that it now bears no resemblance to current reality. You need a study that has some figures and some projections that mean something. You may be able to approve an addendum, which the Alaska Power Authority, I understand, is working very hard to provide you. But the thing that the study that is mentioned in Senate Bill 69 has really nothing to do with what is really happening today and what may happen 20 years in our future. Just a couple of assumptions. One is the assumption of continually rising fossil fuel costs. We've seen a blip right here, which may last a short time or a long time, where fossil fuel costs are coming down. It was also assumed in the original projections of this study that natural gas prices would be about $3 per MCF over the next 20 years. That has turned out not to be true, and Star signed contract for 70 cents less per MCF, which makes differences of hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't know what that is exactly. Now, the policy question I believe you have to ask is it right to subsidize one form of energy with state money to compete with an already inexpensive energy source with its price already established by the free market? I think that most legislators and administrators agree that from a policy standpoint, every project should meet three tests. And I've heard this from former legislators, present legislators, former lieutenant governors. First of all, is it needed? I think before you decide the economic viability of Susitna, you have to decide if it is really needed. I've heard several alternatives mentioned by other people, two of which, Bradley Lake, which has been under construction for many, many years, and Lake Chacachama, which might provide the needed electrical hydropower that Anchorage needs. Two, it should be economically feasible and show a return on investment, as if a private corporation had to decide whether or not to invest in it. It should be environmentally sound is the third. In regards to need, I may sound like I'm repeating myself, but no one now knows, including the Alaska Power Authority, how much power can be sold, to whom, and at what price. Those are the basic items the state has to know to have any idea if it's going to be a return on investment. We have a recent example of Tai'i, the dam at Tai'i, which, if the costs had been realistically projected, they would have known in advance it would be a financial flop. That dam was 75% state grant subsidized and can't even compete with burning diesel fuel. Terror Lake is in worse shape. With Susitna, we're talking about a dam that is 22 times as big as Tai'i, and the state grant funding that is currently proposed is 25% less. I don't know all the numbers. I'm not a mathematician, and I'm not an economist. But from a philosophical standpoint, to say that Susitna will give us cheap power only if it's heavily subsidized to compete with other forms of available energy, and maybe just enough consumers will be found to make a return on investment, reminds me of something that Ronald Reagan recently said. He said he would wipe out deficits, cut taxes, and increase defense spending. What have we got? The largest budget deficit in American history. I think it's significant that Chugach Electric is taking a very close look at whether they can provide their customers economical service. While the Chamber of Commerce and the Associated General Contractors are hot to get this project going in Anchorage, I think Chugach Electric should be applauded for taking a very careful look at it before they take the plunge to support Susitna. If the project becomes successful, we need to ensure other Alaskans are compensated an equal share of the wealth. I have not studied Senator Halford's bill. I just saw it today for the first time. It seems like a good idea. But I would caution Senator Halford that we would not want to attach any specific project to a local service area until that project was deemed to be the best. The funding sounds good. Just please examine what is being said and what we are going to save in terms of money. We're going to have to spend money to subsidize the dam. We already have cheap power. An earlier speaker alluded to the fact our cooking up gas reserves will be gone by the end of the century. I disagree. I've seen some very good oil company studies that show that cooking up gas reserves are probably good well into the next century, till 2020 or 2030 at the very least. I would also remind you that the Northwest Gas Pipeline, Alpetco, and Dow Shell are all major projects, all recent major projects, that seem to be solid until the available information was closely examined. In the case of Susitna, the information is still being compiled, let alone being disseminated and examined. It still needs to go through that process. As far as Senate Bill 68, I would very quickly like to say that I agree the public should have the final say-so on Susitna, not by means of an advisory vote, but by means of a binding referendum. Senate Bill 68 calls for a special election this year in 1983, and I seriously doubt that the general public and possibly even the legislature is going to have the information, adequate information, to understand all of the issues and make a good decision. It'll also cost us about $1 million to put it on, I understand, so I'm against having an advisory vote. Maybe by 1984 we can put it in the general election at no extra cost, and some of these issues will be been resolved, and we'll have a lot more information. The Department of Fish and Game is also developing more information. One other thing I wish to mention, I think it's very important. The Dittman Survey, recently commissioned by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, what was publicized in the newspapers was that 72% of the population that was surveyed in this commission survey supported Susitna. But if you read the entire survey, and I did see it once, they also asked some other questions that were a good deal straighter than the question they asked if you support Susitna. In the survey, the respondents were asked if they knew how much the project would cost, more than one half. 53% of the people did not know the $5.4 billion projected cost, and that's in $82. In another question, people were asked the areas that would be served by Susitna Power. And this, another, about 50%, 49% did not know, repeat, did not know what areas would be served by the Susitna Dam. Now, the Chamber of Commerce publicized that 72% of people supported the project. However, if you subtract 49% from 72%, from people who have no idea how much the dam will cost, and the same number from people who don't know where the power from the dam will go, it seems to me that you're left with very few people who both support the project and who really know what it will cost and serve which area. So I think the survey, although I don't completely agree with the way it was done, does indicate one thing, and that is that very few people know what it's going to cost and where it's going to serve. So I think the public really needs to be educated very thoroughly before we can take their vote as being something that's understood. Senate Bill 71, empowering the APA to put full faith and credit and resources behind the state. Other people have echoed my comments. I'm afraid I wouldn't want to jeopardize our bond rating, and I've heard it rumored that the APA's own bond council has warned that large amounts of bonds for Susitna could indeed jeopardize the bond rating. And to close, I would say we may eventually need Susitna Dam. We may need it sooner than I think. But I think we need to look at the alternatives as well as Susitna, being Bradley Lake and Chacachama. I have not addressed the pertinent fisheries and environmental issues, nor have I dealt with the possibility the dam may be cheaper the longer we wait in terms of real fixed dollars and lower interest rates. Don't let anybody tell you, well, they say, in 1990 it's going to cost $15 billion. Sure, a loaf of bread might cost us $3 in 1992. Those dollars are all relative if you either index them to a certain year or you index them to something like gold, which may or may not work. However, the economics of waiting might be actually advantageous with the lowering of interest rates rather than taking what we've got now. I think that also needs to be looked at. Bottom line, once again, the needed facts aren't in. The public needs to understand them when they are in, and then a wise decision can be made. So I again ask you to reject Senate Bills 68, 69, and 71. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you for your statement. Any comments or questions? Thank you, Jim. Next, we have George Smilow. After that, Doug Scott. I assume you want to talk about it. After that, we have three more signed up.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Slagle. I'm speaking for myself. I am the chairman of the Citizen Advisory Committee, University of Anchorage, Alaska. University of Alaska, Anchorage, correction. However, I'm not speaking for that committee. I am not speaking for the university system or the University of Alaska, Anchorage. I'm speaking strictly for myself. I'm for development of our resources. I'm for development of our people. We do need this development. We need to develop our oil, gas, and other minerals. To do this, we do need to have a source of energy. I am for hydro because it is a cyclical source of energy. I'm not so sure that we need a hydroelectric system in such a large extent, however. I do think that in view of projections not always coming to fruition, we may be better served by looking at things on an incremental basis. We may want to spread our source of power throughout the state and other rivers and streams. In time of war, you would hate to have one dam as your target and have everything in Alaska based on that one dam. You might want to also consider having the other sources of power. I like hydro because we can use something that is within the in the state for our own needs and sell oil and gas to other people, thereby making more money. Now I look at this sort of like in my own capacity, I'm looking at my income. I want to buy a house. I have to feed myself, my family. I want to clothe them. I want to educate my kids. I'm not going to go out if I only have a 6-month-old baby and buy an 18-room house. I may start off with a two-room house, two-bedroom. And then build as we get along. Maybe that's what we need to do in our hydroelectric system. I think that we need a balanced approach to government here in our expenditures. If the government was only in the hydroelectric business, then fine. You know, zero in on spending your money for the hydroelectric power to the detriment of everything else. But that's not what we're after, really. As government, we serve our people, and we have many services to perform. And here's where I get to my point in education. Let's not overlook the education. We need to develop our people as well as our resources. The University of Alaska and other system, University of Alaska Anchorage, has problems now in our era of declining revenues. We have a $1.8 million shortfall in the operating budget, of which $600,000 is necessary just to open three classroom buildings. We'll have a shortfall of $275,000 for next year in just utilities. We'll have $440,000 shortfall in hiring professors. We will have the balance of that comes from the 2.5% reduction in the operating budget from the administration. In addition, we need to expand our campus so that we can train our people so they can develop the resources. We need to buy land. We need to build classroom buildings. The kids out there going to ACC and UAA are standing in line. They can't get their classes, things of that nature. I zero in on that one thing to show you. Let's not put all of our eggs in one basket. Let us consider there are other things in this state that need to be developed as well. And that concludes my testimony.
Thank you very much. Eloquent statement. Doug Stark. Next, after that, Ron Kuschek. I may murder some of the names, but just have to forgive me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, distinguished senators. This is a long-term project. It's a long-term project in the sense that it's going to last for hundreds of years, and it's a long-term project in the sense that it's going to take a long time to build. It's going to take 7 to 8 years to build it after we start. And it's going to take a number of years to proceed to the point of starting. And I think it's desirable that we move ahead and that we move ahead till we get to the point where we make the final decision whether to go or not go with the project, which is contingent on the sales contracts and financing and everything else. But in the meantime, it's necessary to move ahead. One of the things that's important to consider, too, is that the utilities need to make commitments as to how they're going to generate their power, how are they going to receive the power that they sell. If Susitna is not going to be a go, then they're going to have to make other commitments. If in the meantime it's uncertain, they need to make commitments for generating types, systems to generate power, which if they make enough of these commitments will make it infeasible for the project. So if the project isn't going to go, then the utilities need to do something else. But there is a long lead time involved, and they've got to move ahead in the meantime. What are the alternatives to Susitna? Some people don't like the development of Susitna Hydro for whatever reason, but I think it's clear that we're going to have electric power in the future, and we're going to need to generate more in one way or another. So let's say, for instance, we don't have Susitna. What are we going to have? We're going to have coal generating plants. The Acres study said that was the most feasible alternative. You have a heavy cost with the coal. You have to have the generating plants to generate the power, and then you have to periodically replace them as they wear out, plus you have to have the fuel. Are you going to have the used gas? There's not enough gas in the Gimlet area, and the price will be such that if there was, that it would be non-competitive with Susitna. Some people say, well, we've got lots of gas on the North Slope, we can use that. Well, we have the supply, but the cost would be substantial. The cost would be substantially more than the local gas, which is too expensive. So if you look at the other factors, you can say, well, maybe we don't want to build Susitna, you know, we don't like that, it's awful. But the point is, we have to do something. And if you look at all the alternatives, it turns out that on the basis of both economics and clean power, that Susitna appears to be the best one. What do we have right now with Susitna? We have a wasting resource. You have all the water that is now being used to make small rocks out of big rocks. If we use that power, we don't have any fuel cost. We have the capital construction cost, which is substantial at the beginning, but then you have that cost paid for the next 100 years. So you have a wasting resource. You also have, with that resource, you have a limited area that you can export that power. If you take your other resources, your gas, your coal, your oil, those are exportable. And so I would think the wise policy would be to develop the resources that we have in the area, such as hydro, and to export those resources which are exportable, such as the coal, the gas, and the oil. And so I think that it's desirable to move ahead with the project until we get to the point where we make a final go or no-go decision. If you've got to answer any questions.
So I have both questions and comments. First of all, I have a hard time to approach a river that is flowing where the water is used as being a wasting resource. I don't think McKinley is a wasting resource simply because we don't pull half a mountain down there. But if we don't, he thinks the Prince William Sound and enjoy its wilderness and its know it's there. I don't think it's a waste to just have Prince William Sound there. That's a philosophical issue. You say that North Slope gas will be too expensive. What do you base it on? If it was, let's say, hiked down to Fairbanks and generated up north and then wheeled down through the other side?
Well, the Acres study showed that at a cost of $3 per MCF, that Susitna was a better alternative than.
Acres did not look at the North Slope. As of now, North Slope gas is almost at zero wellhead by the negative price, so some have argued. But they said it's an alternative to take it out, so we're not talking about $3 gas. Let's assume it were $0 and the state put $1.8 billion into it, subsidizing. What would be the result cost?
You have the cost of the fuel, which, you know, you can construct any cost on the North Slope for that you desire. You use the figure of zero, which may or may not be true. Then you have the cost of bringing it down. Then you have the cost of the plant to generate power, and the plant has to be replaced every 25 or 30 years. I don't have the figures, but I would suspect that it would be more than Susitna.
Yeah. Well,
if you bring it down here, then you might as well, if you brought it as far as Anchorage, then you might as well take it somewhere else and export it, which would help the nation's balance of payments, and it would also give the royalties to the state.
I was simply asking a question because you you made a statement it's too expensive, and so far I've not heard of one study that has analyzed the use of industrial gas. The other question I have is, you said there's a long lead time you were developing. We have to move ahead in the meantime. What do you mean by move ahead in the meantime?
Take the actions on the legislative arena and the FERC license applications till we get to the point where we make the go or no-go decision.
In other words, you concur with what the legislature's been doing so far, including the filing of FERC.
Yeah,
fine. That's what I thought you were asking for more than that.
Mr. Chairman, I can't just spend on this all, but it's serious. Your business on small rocks, I think maybe we ought to push for the new pet rock rate so we can sell a product until we're ready to
The point there, of course, is that you have the energy. You can say, well, you're not wasting the country or the river or anything like that, but you're wasting the energy. You have the fuel.
No, I really don't understand that. I usually said profit. We have the head of good market.
Thanks, Doug. Next we have Ron.
Name is Kuzik, sir.
Kuzik. Thank you, Ron. Sorry about that. And after Ron, we have Mark Belts.
My name is Ron Kuzik, and I'm a 13-year resident. I live in Anchorage. The address is 6008 Winding Way. I'm the former manager of the Anchorage Air Pollution Control Agency, but today I'm speaking for myself, a private citizen, who is also a commercial salmon fisherman. After reviewing all the data and attending as many public information sessions as you said as possible, I've come to my own conclusion that the Susitna Hydroelectric Project is not only feasible, but it should be built at all speed. I base this conclusion on the following factors. One, Cook Inlet gas, or any other Alaskan gas for that matter, is a valuable non-renewable resource, and the product should be reserved for the highest and best use. Utilizing this product or oil as a primary fuel for electrical generation, in my opinion, may have been acceptable in the past for electrical generation purposes. But growth that is now occurring, and which is projected to continue to grow in the Rail Belt region, will place an enormous stress on this finite gas supply. No matter what the projections of reserves tell us, once the gas is gone, it is gone forever. Building Susitna will decrease the daily usage of this gas by approximately 40% to 50% in South Central Alaska. This would extend the life of the gas fields in the Cook Inlet area and make more gas available for the thermal needs and other higher uses. The second factor centers around the cost of electricity generated by natural gas. People in Anchorage, myself included, in the Mat-Su Valley, are generally raising all kinds of ruckus about their electric bills and the fact that the cost of electricity is going up substantially. In my opinion, these folks are in for further surprises. First of all, recent gas contracts negotiated by NSTAR has raised the price of gas from less than $1 to something over $2 per MCF. We are starting to feel the effects of these increases in our gas bills now, and the pay-through provision, which is exercised by all electrical utilities, will surely be felt in our electric bill. Fuel prices, I believe, will continue to rise at a substantial rate, which in turn will further precipitate the rise in gas for oil-generated electricity. Although the front-end cost of Susitna will be on the order of megadollars, the cost of electricity over the long term can be controlled more so than the cost of electricity generated by either gas or oil. My third factor centers on the alternatives proposed in lieu of Susitna. My evaluation of the data on the alternatives indicates that that is a primary power source. The only real alternatives to Susitna are coal-fired and nuclear power plants. Of course, nuclear power plants have been eliminated for obvious reasons. I have also eliminated wind, solar, and the other alternative sources, not because they are ineffective, but because they cannot seriously be considered as primary generators of electrical power. But this leaves coal. My experience, by virtue of my educational background, and as the ex-manager of the Anchorage Air Pollution Control Agency, tells me that although coal may be competitive with Susitna under certain scenarios, the environmental problems associated with this fossil fuel may affect more change to the Alaskan lifestyle than any dam. First, environmental laws that centered around the prevention of significant deterioration requirements. They actually stifled both within the airships of coal plants. Next, if coal is used, I can guarantee you you'll see a significant degradation in visibility no matter how complex the pollution control devices are used. Third, the acid rain problems associated with any coal plant may be more than the ultimate requirement for. Finally, problems on ash disposal and the transportation of the coal product will also be significant. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that there are environmental problems associated with both Susitna and coal-fired power plants. But in my opinion, the negative problems can be more easily mitigated on the Susitna project than with coal, including the management of salmon runs. Again, I say that as a commercial salmon fisher. I can continue with many other reasons why I have concluded that Susitna should be built. But because time is critical in this hearing, let me conclude by saying that I support Susitna and I'd like to see it built.
Thank you for all right, that's nice. Now let's take it. Thank you very much. Mark, you're next. After that, we have Brian Boyd.
I just wanted to mention that energy is a very much of an economic concern of mine, and I think of it all the time as I see the newspapers and the magazines on our energy future since the energy crisis of 73. And I support Susitna. I wanted to mention that I do support the Susitna Dam project because I'm in favor of cheaper sources of energy. And each year, as you see, the statistics show that energy cost has been rising, and we need to find a way of stabilizing the cost of energy. And I thought that also, besides having hydro, I often thought of other sources such as nuclear energy. I talked to Sturgalewski about that when she was out in the audience before you reconvened, and she says it's against the Alaskan statutes. And I often thought of if they can have solar power plants that can, they always say that the sun and the moon affect the movements of the oceans and the tides. And if they had possibly a solar thing that can attract the sun that would affect the water movements of our hydroelectric. I used to own stock in an energy company called Optical Coatings. It was a solar power company. And they have this paint, and it has a thing that it stores solar energy inside molecules. It's molecules that stores it as well as, so when the sun isn't out, you still have energy to survive. And if we can find a way of having that up here, and somehow I don't know exactly how to explain it, but it would, solar and wind and the environment all work together. And if they can do that, possibly we can have more energy up here for Alaska's future. Because right now, our cost of energy is the highest in the United States, especially in Anchorage, is one of the most expensive places for electric bills. And I want to see new sources of energy. And when they build the new state office building in downtown Anchorage, I hope it's energy efficient, and I hope it's full of weatherization and so forth. And I support Susitna, and I hope Susitna gets passed.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you for your statement. Next, we have Bill Holton, after that, Brian Boyd, Earl Finkler, and Charles Konigsberg.
Mr. Chairman and Honorable Committee, I am an authority on absolutely nothing, but am pleased to have this opportunity to testify before you on matters that I am concerned with. I am opposed to large-scale hydropower projects because of what I've witnessed in the past. I represent myself and feel that I am in agreement with a respectable number of people that may be affected by Susitna hydropower project if it is carried out. From what I've read and seen concerning this project, I believe it is too expensive and would be a waste of our state's money. The project is too large for any one single project. We have too much at stake. Alternative sources of energy have been proven to be effective for powering businesses and heating homes. $15 billion or whatever the cost may be for the dam construction, we could have everyone in the state set up with micro hydropower, solar power, wind power, and or geothermal power, among other sources, and we could still have money left over for maintenance and expansion of what we would already have. These ideas are not so far out, but just simple. I'm also wary of the ways and processes by which this project would be financed. I have learned by experience that you don't try to do something if you don't have the money in hand to do it comfortably. Whether the case be small or large, you just don't do something without appropriate funds, or else you suffer. Why suffer? The environmental factors concerning the Susitna project are obvious, and I know this isn't an environmental meeting, but it's only short. Mess with the river, and you'll lose part of it, and maybe lose this part forever. Forever is a sickening word when used in this context. People should enjoy and work Alaska for what we already have. I don't live here just to do things once or twice. Take catching salmon in the river, for example. By building this dam, we are taking a chance of destroying the Susitna salmon fishery as we know it. I want to do something like fishing in the river for salmon over and over and over again. Why take chances when such a great and large thing is at stake, like the Susitna drainage? I think that building this dam would be a selfish act of incompetence. I want my children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren to be able to experience the same things that I enjoy if they choose to do so. I don't think we should be making decisions now for later generations that would be irreparable later. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Ryan and Boyd, after that, our opening question.
Thank you, Good afternoon. I have one, I think, very succinct point to make. I'm sure you're all hoping to get out of here a respectable hour. I believe it's actually a fairly common sense point. With the 1982 projections, we're talking about essentially over $12,000 per man, woman, and child to be spent on this one hydroelectric project. And if anyone else's electrical bills are anything like mine, the state would have to give me that electricity generated from Susitna essentially free for 10 to 20 years in order to pay those current electrical bills. And the economic projections, of course, for the future are all somewhat up in the air. And it simply seems to me that at a point where oil revenues are declining and we're talking about funding priorities, problems, say, with the Project 80's Performing Arts Center being cut back by something approximating half, that we could simply spend our money better in other fashions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your statement. All right. Carol?
I'm Earl Finkler, Director of Planning with CSM, Architects, Engineers, and Planners. And I have a short statement. I appreciate the length of your hearings. Whatever the ultimate disposition of the Susitna project and extent of state financing, it is very important to frame actions and subsidies in a statewide context. Our firm has worked on energy projects and energy conservation in many areas of Alaska, but we would like to emphasize the need for comprehensive state action to help solve the critical rural energy problem. A study by the Institute of Social and Economic Research projects that by 1988, the proportion of cash income spent on fuel, oil, and electricity will rise from 29%, which they had in 1978, to 43% for rural native households. With energy expenditures consuming almost half of the cash income, it will be very difficult, if not impossible, for rural native communities and the rural areas in general to survive. Residents of the bush are already paying more for electricity and heating, but using less, and I add on a household basis, for each resource than residents of the rail belt area. Now, while the state still has a fairly healthy capital budget, there's still time to do something very meaningful regarding the rural energy problem. The recent draft of the state energy plan notes the great potential and high paybacks of conservation. Our experience in rural communities such as Anantuvik Pass shows the great potential of conservation, even with the underfunded home energy audit and retrofit program of the state. By combining the state program with North Slope Borough contributions, we were able to achieve 100% implementation of home energy audits, compared to a figure of about 30-40% for statewide. We estimate 10-year energy cost savings of almost $240,000 for some 70 homes in the village. In addition, about one-fifth of the total project budget went for local hire, wages, local people trained and paid for energy retrofit work. Between conservation, improved fuel storage and delivery, and carefully planned alternate energy systems, it would not be difficult to estimate that a major state program approaching the scope of CSITNA could make a real difference in rural Alaska. In addition to reducing energy costs, the program could also hire great numbers of local people, develop local industries, and reduce or eliminate the need for endless fuel and electricity subsidies. In conclusion, we did not come to take a specific stand for or against the CSITNA project, or various financing options open to the state. We want to urge the legislature to think of all state energy needs and plan their actions based on a rational approach, which is fair to all areas. Everyone likes projects that promise cheap energy, but it can be very helpful to take the longer view and develop systems and approaches that will stimulate both large and small community development for years to come. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Questions?
Yes, thank you for a very fine statement. I definitely want to have a copy of your statement. Yes, because I think the points you make are very well taken, and CSITNA completely aside, the strategy that you and North Slope Borough are pursuing, is that quite model for the rest of
Alaska. Well, I might add, if I could take a minute, that we testified at the hearings on the state draft energy plan and raised the issue of whether there are even criteria or guidelines for estimating a rural energy program which would balance or go on concurrently with a CSITNA type program. We were told there was not. So, as a planner, I would recommend when you do strategic plans for energy at the state level, that if you're considering large projects in one area, you at least have some contingency plans or some plans that are somewhat relative or criteria, at least, other than, say, pure population numbers or something, to deal with energy problems wherever they are in the state. And not that anchorages aren't important, I'm not saying that, but state problems demand state action, I think.
Well, I think your point is well taken, both equity and political reality will call for doing something in rural areas. This is where Senator Halpern's bill takes that kind of comprehensive approach. So it's something for everybody. I said the Baroni said old political maxim. Thank you very much, Chuck Konigsberg.
I'd rather describe this paper.
Yeah. It wasn't my intention to come here to speak, just to listen, but after hearing comments about wasted resources and big rocks and little rocks, I thought I couldn't lower the level of debate any further than that. What I do want to bring to your attention and ask for your consideration is what is perhaps, at least in my perspective, the major unspoken factor in a consideration of whether a large project like this should be undertaken or not. And that is the factor of political power. An enormous project like CSITNA, with historical comparisons in terms of the TVA, the DPA, and so on, is not only something that has to be considered in light of consideration of an energy giant and a financial glutton, but of an enormous political power colossus. If you create a situation of this sort, what you give to the agency is enormous political power. Now, your committee, of course, is focusing on economic considerations, and other panels focus on environmental and other considerations, but the political factor is very much a part of everything. You are going to create, and I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't, center of power in the state, which has enormous independent influence over virtually everything that occurs. Because it will create, in fact, it has already begun to create its own political constituency of a considerable influence. That, in fact, is why you're sitting here today. If you bring it to fruition, the political power that you're only beginning to see evidence of will be enormously expanded, and you won't be able to avoid it. The TVA and the BPA have ramified in terms of their importance in the area far beyond considerations of energy and water projects and so on. And I suggest that once you create it, you won't be able to control it. It will, in effect, have its own way with the legislature and the executive, just as other independent agencies in this state seem to have their independent ability to affect the event. So I just want to bring it to your attention.
Sure. I'm glad you made this point, because I can't remember who said what today, but somebody referred to having lived up in Buffalo and seen the power development in New York State, and that reminded me that power development was provided by Robert Moses, who was the ultimate power broker, as described in the book by that name. It's a marvelous book, and that's exactly the lesson that you described. It's an interesting factor. I would hope we can learn from mistakes and control power behavior.
Well, it has such a powerful effect on the conventional wisdom. Something like Susitna is a factor of consideration today for many people, not really because of its energy dimension, but because it reflects the gigantism that is endemic in American way of looking things. I mean, the bigger it is, the more impressed we are. You've got a canyon there with water flowing through it. Damn it, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to dam it up. It has nothing to do with energy. I mean, the energy argument comes in afterwards, because you want to justify the conventional view you took of it to begin with. And I'm not knocking this. I'm not saying yes or no. Believe it or not, either way it goes, it's okay, because I don't think it's going to matter. Certain trends have been established already. But the dangers will be more or less greater depending on which way you go.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't think we can let him get away with that, at least saying something about those dangers and what kind of proposals we might have to deal with.
Well, I don't
can't just define the question.
Well, I don't